This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 11th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up in legal issues on the news, what judges have to say about cases they really don't want to comment on. We'll also get a forecast for the week ahead from AM 580 forecaster Mike Sola. First, a look at today's news. A new report says Illinois isn't doing a good enough job protecting its citizens from eminent domain. That's when government seize private property for commercial development. Steven Anderson runs the Castle Coalition, the group that put out the report. He says Illinois got a bad grade because a new state law meant to protect owners has too many loopholes.
This grade, the D+, means that home and small business owners across Illinois are still under threat of the abuse of eminent domain. Their properties can still be taken for private commercial development.
But State Senator Susan Garrett, who supported the Illinois legislation, credits the law with leveling the playing field between municipalities and property owners. The freshmen in this year's Illinois legislature are no longer green rookies. The group of newcomers in the House and Senate have had a memorable debut as the session is in overtime with no end in sight. They include first-term Democratic Senator Mike Frericks of Gifford. They've passed their first bills, cast crucial votes, been lobbied by the governor, and watched legislative leaders squabble. They say it's been a true learning experience about the political ins and outs of Springfield. The freshmen say they're disappointed that the session didn't end on time, but they're hopeful that overtime will produce a better budget than if they had wrapped up earlier. They also say they're pleased that they've been able to push their issues and have input on important topics. The freshmen say their priorities of education reform, property tax relief, and construction money should be part of the final mix. A death penalty moratorium on Illinois and court disputes over lethal injection in more than a half dozen states have helped anti-death penalty forces gain momentum in recent years. But there's been little notice to a series of academic studies that say the death penalty is a deterrent to murder. Conducted over the last 6 years, the studies count between 3 and 18 lives that it says would have been saved by the execution of each convicted killer. Research from the University of Houston says Illinois' death penalty moratorium led to 150 additional homicides between 2000 and 2004. The studies so far have had little impact on public policy, and the academic debate, as well as the larger national argument about the death penalty itself, shows no signs of fading away. Police in Urbana found themselves in a standoff over the past weekend after responding to a domestic disturbance call. They say an unarmed man fled an apartment complex Saturday afternoon and then holed himself inside an apartment in the 1600 block of North Lincoln. Police say the man refused to talk to officers but began communicating when hostage negotiators arrived. The man surrendered soon after without injury. Police are not identifying the man. They say he's in custody but mention no charges. The conditions of a Champaign man and the police officer he's accused of shooting have not changed over the weekend. Donnell Clemens is listed in critical condition this morning at Carle Foundation Hospital. Officer Shannon Bridges was listed as in fair condition. Bridges and two other Champaign officers were shot Thursday night after they responded to a man with a gun inside a car at Westside Park. Clemens faces charges of attempted murder and aggravated discharge of a firearm. The two other Champaign officers were treated for their injuries and released the next day. Attorneys for former Hollinger International CEO Conrad Black will be calling their final witnesses this week in Chicago. Black and three others are charged with stealing millions of dollars from shareholders. The company owned hundreds of publications, including the Chicago Sun-Times. Diantha Parker reports.
The remaining testimony will underscore the defense's main point. Black's attorneys say there was nothing illegal, secretive, or even unusual about the non-compete payments Black and the other defendants got when Hollinger sold newspapers. The payments were part of contracts that promised the company wouldn't start publications to compete with ones they just sold. The trial has lasted about 14 weeks, although the jury's had several days off. Last week, the judge said closing arguments will start June 18th. They're expected to take about 4 days. The judge's instructions for the jury will take another day, and then they'll start deliberating. I'm Diantha Parker.
The famed Route 66 is on a list of the world's most endangered landmarks because of years of neglect and commercial development. The World Monuments Fund is a nonprofit preservation group. It added the famous roadway to its list of 100 most endangered historic, cultural, and architectural sites earlier this month. The list is compiled every 2 years. Other endangered landmarks include historic neighborhoods in New Orleans devastated by Hurricane Katrina, along with far-flung sites like the skyline of St. Petersburg, Russia. In its heyday, Route 66 stretched from Chicago to St. Louis and continued across the country to Los Angeles. But preservationists say landmarks along the roadway, including motels and sections of brick pavement, are steadily disappearing. The National Weather Service says somebody's been submitting fictional reports of severe weather, causing unnecessary alerts and frightening people. According to Tom Schwein of the National Weather Service in Kansas City, the areas affected have included Chicago and Lincoln, Illinois, as well as Milwaukee and La Crosse, Wisconsin. The Lincoln office serves central Illinois. Schwein says the faker started sending reports back in mid-April through an online form on the service's website. He says more than 25 bogus reports were submitted from the same computer over one weekend this month, and the service typically gets 40 to 50 per month from that source. For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. There are frivolous lawsuits, and then there are truly ridiculous lawsuits. Commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News that judges sometimes are forced to comment on cases that don't belong in court, and they don't much like it.
Imagine, if you will, that you're a judge sitting on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. Your name is Richard Posner, and when you're not deciding cases and hearing oral arguments, you're writing books and magazine articles. In other words, you don't have time for shenanigans. And then you get an appeal that alleges this. The United States and China have a conspiracy to biochemically infect and invade people with a mind-reading and mental torture device. And the plaintiff, the party appealing because the trial court threw out his complaint as frivolous, has created a device that will enable people whose minds are being invaded to relocate to other planets with the help of email and a nanny service. You, being Richard Posner, are not amused. And the real Richard Posner wasn't either. In the case from a few years back, Judge Posner fired off an opinion about the case, calling the plaintiff, in his words not mine, a lunatic in the literal sense of the word. Appeal dismissed, the seventh lawsuit filed by the plaintiff to be dismissed in that year alone, Judge Posner noted. Frivolous filing is a problem that besets not only the Seventh Circuit, of course. Take a case decided last September in the Court of Federal Claims in which the plaintiff alleged that the government implanted a transmitting device into plaintiff's brain and widely broadcast plaintiff's thoughts. The plaintiff there asked for damages of $300 billion. He didn't get it. The court called his claim wholly incredible and dismissed the action. Or a case from Michigan decided several years ago. There, the plaintiff filed a lawsuit against some 45 defendants, including the unlikely co-conspirators William Jefferson Clinton, Ken Starr, and a veterinarian who treated the family pets. To the extent the complaint is intelligible, the court wrote, it appears to challenge a ruling that the plaintiff be sent to a forensic hospital for testing. An eager clerk at the local courthouse inexplicably gave the plaintiff's representatives more than 160 summons forms, and they summoned more people as defendants, including talk show host Lisa Gibbons, Ameritech, and the Food and Drug Administration, certainly proving the plaintiff's charge that the conspiracy against him was of a magnitude never before seen in the country or the world. In a many-page opinion filled mostly with the many names of the defendants came two key words— case dismissed. I read Judge Posner's opinion dismissing the biochemical mind control and nanny-guided planet-finding device case, noting the et al. After William Jefferson Clinton's name, and wondered how much attorney and judicial time went into that case, how many attorney-toning defendants made up that Latin phrase. Judge Posner wrote that we need to better hone appeals, that trial court judges should refuse to certify for appeal lawsuits filed in bad faith, and that a lawsuit filed in bad faith can mean one so frivolous that no reasonable person would see any merit to the case, even though the plaintiff might. There are other frivolous cases out there. Attorneys can be sanctioned if they file a frivolous claim, which is why the more incredible lawsuits are brought by the plaintiffs themselves. And remember Judge Posner's musings about the number of cases filed by his inventor before 1999? I found one, 1997, the inventor's claim to be exempt from federal income tax was denied. Case dismissed. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. For the most part, Illinois will see some dry weather over the week ahead. Our forecaster Mike Sola says today in southwest Illinois there is a chance of a few scattered showers with a partly to mostly cloudy sky, but elsewhere partly to mostly sunny and no rain. Highs today ranging from 80 in southern Illinois to 88 in northwest Illinois. Tonight, a few lingering showers in southwest Illinois, otherwise clear to partly cloudy. The lows ranging from 55 in eastern Indiana to 63 in western Illinois. And sunny again tomorrow, with highs ranging from 80 near Lake Michigan to 88 degrees in some central Illinois locations and in the south. Much of the same in the forecast for Wednesday, sunshine and the central Illinois high again around 88 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 11th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.